ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Gene, we're going to talk about the backstory of Derek Stingley Jr., the LSU cornerback, who has a life that is worth exploring in depth, and you've reported on that. But I first want to just introduce him. Why is he a name that we're going to be hearing so much about during the NFL draft this week?
Well, we hear that word savant, football savant. And coming through high school, Stingley Jr. was one of those kind of players. Everyone, and I mean everyone, wanted him. And he went to high school in the Baton Rouge area, so it was going to be very difficult to get him away from LSU. He was a guy that was sort of born, raised, has the DNA from his grandfather, Darryl Stingley. His dad played football. So, I mean, it was just sort of in his blood. But he's an incredibly gifted player at a position that you need every gift that you can get. In college at LSU, he was a guy as a true freshman who came in actually when the bowl game was going on. And Ed Orgeron told us he could have played in the bowl game after just going through bowl practices. Does that give you an idea of the talent level?
Well, Gene, I mean, you've covered college football for so long. This is incredibly rare, bordering on presumptuous, to make a claim that a high school player basically can walk onto a field at LSU and hang with those defensive backs specifically.
Not hang, could have started in the bowl game. But Ed Orgeron has said that by the end of his career, he could have been the greatest cornerback ever at LSU.
He just came in from day one and was able to compete at a starting position. The play he made on that ball, he made those plays every Saturday. I think he's going to be an excellent player, and you see him.
You know what they call LSU, you know, DBU.
Yes, so, I mean, Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, Jamal Adams, on and on, Gene. That is borderline hyperbolic is what that sounds like when I hear it.
Well, I suppose there is a little bit of that. You know, Ed Orgeron certainly is capable of doing that and might have done it in this case. But if you base it on his freshman year at LSU, it certainly wasn't hyperbole. He was a revelation. He was a difference maker. He was a game changer. Every cliche you want to use, he was that kind of player. And Joe Burrow told us, you know, when the true freshmen come for the very first time, he likes to test them.
I always like to just throw at the freshmen that are coming in, see if what they're made of. That's the best true freshman I've ever seen.
So, Gene, now Derek Stingley Jr. is this top 10 prospect, right? That's how he's being evaluated. Defensive back, cornerback is so vitally important, as you alluded to, in the modern NFL. But the whole lineage of him, right? Like, the whole idea that this is Lil Sting, as his family calls him. I mean, when people who know football hear his full name, Derek Stingley Jr., what do they ask?
Anyone who's not familiar with the backstory, Darryl Stingley was a gifted wide receiver himself, played at Purdue, came into the league, was a really high-level wide receiver, and played in the game against the Oakland Raiders. Jack Tatum, again, old-school defensive back, had a reputation for trying to tear your helmet off.
I mean, his nickname, Jack Tatum's nickname, the Assassin.
And that was no joke. He was a football assassin. And so Darryl Stingley got viciously hit during a game.
Second down and 13 now from the 24. Stingley and Morgan, the wide receivers. They're going to put it in the air. Oh, the intended receiver is Darryl Stingley. The man he ran into is Jack Tatum. And Stingley was down.
Broke his neck, back injury, spine injury, was a quadriplegic for the rest of his life. And that was Derek Stingley Jr.'s grandfather.
There is no NFL prospect quite like Derek Stingley Jr. He's this defensive prodigy who shut down some of the NFL's most talented receivers in college and also in practice, when he was just 18 years old. And his own grandfather happens to be most famous for embodying the case against the job that Derek Stingley Jr. is about to have. So today, Gene Wojciechowski brings us the history of a family you'll likely see celebrating tonight in the first round of the NFL draft. A history that traces the evolution and the contradictions of football itself. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, April 28th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Gene, I want to make sure that our listeners and the kids out there especially just fully understand the character of Daryl Stingley, Derek Stingley Jr.'s grandfather, because the hit that permanently changed Daryl's life, it also permanently changed the entire sport. So, Gene, what did you and your producer, Chris Duzan, learn about that day that the Patriots visited the Oakland Raiders on August 12th, 1978?
We interviewed Steve Grogan, the quarterback of the Patriots, and you could tell, even now, decades and decades later, he's still affected by that moment. And how could you not be? But he said it took him years to sort of reconcile what happened, because after all, he's the guy who threw the pass, an errant high pass, and he sort of laid his guy out. And as a quarterback, that's one of the cardinal sins. You never want to do that. But for that to unfold the way that it did, it haunted him in many ways. And it took years for him to sort of reconcile that and to just accept that literally is part of the game. And it happened. It was tragic. But you could tell it still affected Steve Grogan. It wasn't a pattern that was unusual. Every wide receiver runs it, except Grogan threw the ball high. And there's nothing worse as a wide receiver for a high pass. And there's no worse combination in professional football than a high pass and Jack Tatum. And Jack Tatum went at him full speed. And here is Stingley, arms outstretched. And at the last second, you can almost see him sort of preparing for the impact. And in this case, and it's not an exaggeration, it is like getting hit by a human bus. And that is what happened. And he caught him in the worst possible spot. And he fell to the ground, crumpled. And everyone immediately knew something was wrong. Terribly, terribly wrong.
Grogan will put it in the air. Oh! The intended receiver is Daryl Stingley. The man he ran into is Jack Tatum. And Stingley was down.
So Jack Tatum hits Daryl Stingley like this, and what kind of treatment, what kind of medical attention does Stingley receive? What happens to him?
Well, it certainly wasn't state of the art that we're familiar with now. There weren't doctors poised. I'm sure there were emergency plans, but nothing like it is now. There really wasn't much that they could do for him at that point. The injury was so traumatic that there was really nothing to be done. He was who he was going to be the rest of his life. He was a quadriplegic, so he really didn't have use of his arms or legs. There was some movement at times, tingling sensations. But if you see the photographs of him, he was in a set position. But he would watch his grandson play football. He would watch him catch passes, run routes. And back then, his mind still worked, and it worked in a football sort of way. And he would look at his grandson, and he told his own son, he has talent, and he could do things, and he has possibilities. Physically, he obviously couldn't move, but mentally, he could analyze the game as well as anyone.
That hit, what happened to Daryl Stingley, Gene, it was this unforgettable scene that got captured on television, broadcast around the country. How was all of this received around the NFL at the time?
I think that was an inflection point. Because remember, NFL films back then used to celebrate those kind of hits.
Right down the middle again.
They hit it.
Held on.
Helmet that went off.
I don't know how he held on to that. Sammy White, but he did. A remarkable catch. Even more an improbable catch with Skip Thomas and Jack Tatum jackknifing him as he caught the ball for a first down.
Dick Butkus, Jack Tatum. Jack Hamm, Lambert. I mean, the steel curtain. All we saw were highlights of just incredibly physical, vicious hits.
Ferguson swings it out. Kyler catches the ball, but there's always someone waiting there. Lambert slams Kyler down. Lambert 6'4", 220, and the terrible towels are a-waving here in Pittsburgh.
And I think that was an awakening. It didn't change the game. It didn't change the way it was played. It didn't change the way it was reffed. It still remained an incredibly physical game. But that hit and what happened to Stingley, to go from a world-class athlete to the rest of his life in a wheelchair, it was an awakening for a lot of us. It brought the game, it became more real to us and what could happen.
What was it even like, Gene, to play receiver in 1978, the era, the year when Stingley got hurt?
Well, you have to understand about playing wide receiver in the NFL in the late 70s, it was hand-to-hand combat. Defensive backs were glued to you. They could hit you all the way down the field. They could smack your helmet. They could knock you under the chin strap. They could grab. They could hold. Remember the Raider, who was it? Lester Hayes, the defensive back of sort of that era. He had so much goop on his hands,
Steckum
on his hands. I mean, it was a different way of playing football.
Going deep. That was Jefferson and Hayes matched up. Two all-pros. Jefferson nodding his head to Hayes as if to say, that was a legal bump. We were both going for the ball. Hayes with an interception in the first half, his fifth in the three playoff games. You don't want to shake hands with Lester until he's had a very good shower.
They might as well have just Velcroed you to a wide receiver and let you carry a crowbar and hit the wide receiver as he's trying to run his patterns. It was that kind of physicality. So if you compare it to what we see today, it literally is night and day, the difference between what a defensive back could do to you back then and what he can do to you now.
I mean, the Lester Hayes, I'm looking at a photo of Lester Hayes right now in the hands and the stickum, which is now also banned as of 1981, Gene, for reasons that you just referenced. But it looks like he just dipped both of his hands, which are, of course, wrapped like a boxer, like he dipped them into just a bucket of adhesive, of literal slime.
Yes. Well, the highest compliment you could pay to a wide receiver back then, and Steve Grogan mentioned this during our interview, is if a receiver went over the middle back then, he literally was, in some respects, taking his life into his hands. Safeties had free rein. They had a running start, and they could hit you wherever they wanted to hit you. And so Grogan paid Stingley the highest compliment by saying he was a guy who was never scared of going over the middle. And and that took a certain courage, a certain football courage to do, especially during that period of the NFL. So, I mean, it was a time when you could lead with the helmet, you could lead with the shoulder. And I've mentioned seeing Stingley's helmet. If you compared it to the helmets that we see today, it was prehistoric. It was a sort of a thin fiberglass a feel to it. The padding inside of it was more webbing than cushion.
Even the face cage, Gene, I'm looking at it now on Google Images. Yeah, it's just like two little bars just at the very bottom. Like none of the fancy futuristic, you know, almost hologram reflector screen kind of stuff that you get now.
No, the weight of it is nothing compared to a helmet that you pick up now. It was almost like a toy helmet. We would think of it that way. If you bought your kid Daryl Stingley's helmet from back then and gave it to him, he would think it was a toy helmet compared to what we have now. So not only was the equipment prehistoric in many ways, but the way that they played the game was certainly of a dinosaur age.
And Gene, this was a preseason game. This wasn't even an actual game that counted where this hit, one of the most violent hits we've ever seen, occurred.
Steve Grogan talked to us a little bit about that. And there was sort of a gentleman's understanding in exhibition games, as they were called back then, that you don't bring your A-plus game. You don't go head hunting. You don't take a shot at a guy in a game that means nothing. Jack Tatum did not believe in any of those gentleman agreements. He was out to behead you. And it didn't matter if it was a practice, a walkthrough, an exhibition game, or the real thing. That's what he did. He wanted to instill fear into any wide receiver coming into his territory. So that wasn't unprecedented for him. But of course, adding to the already Mount Kilimanjaro heights of tragedy here, it happened during a game that meant nothing. So if you're Stingley and you're lying in that bed and you can't move your arms or legs, there has to be part of your mind that goes to a place that says, why? Why would he do that in that game? Those are the realities of the NFL, and it's a heartless, cold game at times, never more so than that day in Oakland.
And Gene, what does Derek Sr., Daryl Stingley's son, Derek Jr.'s father, what does he remember about that experience?
Well, he was just a kid at the time, but he says he remembers being woken up by his mom, and his mom told him, I have to go to Oakland. That's where the game was being played, the Patriots-Raiders game. And like any kid, he didn't know really what was going on, wasn't given many details. All he knows is that when his dad came back, he wasn't the same man again. And there was a certain innocence about it, a child's innocence. What's wrong with my dad? And he walked into the hospital room, and there's his father, strapping, unbelievably athletic man, playing a man's game at the highest level. But his dad couldn't move. And he said he remembered just climbing on top of the bed.
Now, I'm still 7 years old. I don't understand the word paralyzed. And I walked over to the bed, and then I climbed up on his chest and said, Dad, get up. He didn't say anything.
And his dad couldn't do it. And his dad turned away and began crying. And so just think about it, that as a young child, trying to process that and comprehend it, and he couldn't. It made no sense to him. One day his dad is playing professional football, the next day he's in a hospital bed and can't move. So it had to be a incredible experience and memory for him to deal with that.
For the first time, he felt the pain of not being able to move and get up for his baby boy. And he said he cried like a baby that night.
And even now, he gets emotional talking about it.
All right, Gene, after the break, I want to know what Derek Jr. now feels about all of this too.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Gene, it is poetic and strange and just kind of staggering that Derek Stingley Jr.'s job is now defensive back. His job is to tackle the men who played the position of his grandfather, who was paralyzed by Jack Tatum himself, one of the most famously, infamously violent men to play DB we have ever seen. How did the paralysis of his grandfather, the whole story, how did that affect the family, like their relationship to the game?
I mean, it was part of their lives, and it was who they were. Derek Stingley Sr., Daryl's son, loved the game. So the injury, while tragic on so many levels, didn't deter him from playing the game. So, you know, Derek Sr. pulled out the photo albums, the family photo albums. And of course, every fourth photo is connected to football. Page after page after page connected to football. They are proud of being part of the game. And yes, Daryl Stingley was injured and likely died prematurely at a moderately young age based on complications from that hit and from that injury. But it didn't scare them away from playing the game. Derek Stingley Sr. played college ball. He played Arena League football. His son loved watching his dad. His son began playing at a very young age.
Yeah, Daryl Stingley died at age 55, Gene. And I think of that image that you painted for us before about 7-year-old Derek Sr., but you sort of fast forward, and yeah, he's playing football. He's a good football player himself. And then he becomes, not just that, he becomes a coach. Right? Tell me about what his sort of calling as a coach, what that was described as when you talked to him.
Well, he wasn't as gifted as his dad, and he wasn't as gifted as his son, but he loved the game. And so while his talents didn't translate into something more, he has a coach's mentality. And when we talked to him, he was training athletes and specifically football players. He has a business there in the Baton Rouge area where he trains players. And he had a facility. He was an assistant coach at Derek Stingley Jr.'s high school. And they laugh about it. They have such a good relationship, by the way. It is father-son. It is love. But it is also coach player. And Stingley Jr. would talk about how his dad would just simply look at him.
I have a look.
It's a look. He has a look, and when I say this, like, anyone who's ever been coached by him or been around him, when they see this, they're going to know exactly what this look is.
They called it the look. And if he looked over and his dad just gave him the look, he knew he'd screwed up. He knew he had to do something better. And so one of the joys of doing this story and spending multiple days in Baton Rouge was to see that relationship in action.
There seems to be a certain lightness to this relationship, in contradiction of all of the sort of dark stuff that we've been discussing, Gene, which I find pretty conspicuous. And even in that look, you know, I'm curious, speaking of getting a look at the kid, did Daryl ever get a chance to watch his grandson do any of the stuff that he's now becoming very famous for himself?
Yes, Daryl did see Lil Sting play. He was very, very young, though. But even then, Lil Sting would run these patterns, and they were precise. They were like, you know, if it was supposed to be a 12-yard out, it was 12 yards and out. So here's Lil Sting running these patterns as if he knows the route tree by heart, which he probably did, because, again, that's the kind of relationship him and his dad had. And so it was just part of who he was.
How does Lil Sting, Derek Jr., how does he talk about his grandfather, Gene, as you were doing this piece, spending all this time, days with them?
So the memories are vague at best. But in the family house still is the helmet that Daryl wore that day in Oakland. Mm. It's signed by all the Patriot players. And there was a story where Big Sting told us Lil Sting took the helmet one time. And like, this is a family keepsake. And so Lil Sting caused a little bit of a problem by accidentally taking it and thinking that he could wear it. But it is a family keepsake. It's still in the house. And it's a reminder of what was and what could have been.
Yeah, I mean, the visual image, Gene, of Lil Sting, of now, again, like, potential top 10 pick in the NFL draft, wearing the helmet that Daryl Stingley wore on that day, just wearing it around, sort of carefree. I mean, it's a metaphor that writes itself. And now I ask you the question that I think is most pressing. How does Lil Sting approach the idea of injury himself? Like, the idea that this is possible in this sport.
Well, he says what I think we would all say, that I can't think about that.
I've been asked that like once or twice, but I don't think about the injury that he had, though. Like, that wouldn't be good to think about while you're out there playing, because then you won't play to your best ability.
It was a freak accident. It was intentional. It was an intentional hit. But the byproduct of that hit, it was never meant to be that. We have to give Jack Tatum that much. But he understands the physicality and the violence and sort of the barbaric nature of the game. You have to embrace that, especially as a defensive player. If you've watched Stingley Jr. play, I don't think you would call him the most physical cornerback in the world. He is a big guy, and he certainly is capable of being physical, but that's not who he is as a player. He's not a Jack Tatum kind of defensive back. So I think he understands the reality of the game, understands the realities of what can happen. But I don't think he has lived his life thinking constantly about what happened to his grandfather.
So Derek Stingley Jr., an All-American as a true freshman, to your point, he wins the national title, they beat Clemson, in that 2019-2020 season. How do you celebrate a game like that, Gene?
Well, one of the things that that Big Sting had done, he had kept his father's Patriots jersey, the number 84, and it was stored away. And Little Sting knew of it and probably had seen it as a kid, but it wasn't something that they had hanging on a wall. But in that national championship game, for whatever reason, and again, we talk about symmetry, Big Sting brought it to the national championship game, and he had it there in the stands. And when that game was over, Little Sting came over to them, and father gave that jersey to his son.
And after the game, I pulled it out, and I was like, this is your grandfather's jersey. I just wanted a piece of my dad to be involved in this moment in time.
And there's a wonderful image of Lil Sting holding his grandfather's jersey. And so we talk about generation to generation to generation. There is no clearer or more poignant moment than that Stingley jersey being held up by a son, by a grandson who had just won a national championship and who had done the name proud.
I've never seen that jersey before. For like a sense of my grandpa being there with me, with him, with all of us. I know he saw that all the talents and all the lessons been passed down from him to my dad, to me.
But what happened after that, Gene? Because when it comes to picking apart Lil Sting's college resume, it does seem like the next two seasons, that's where things get relatively complicated.
In 2019, when LSU won the national championship, and Stingley Jr. just exploded on the scene, it wasn't uncommon to hear people say, if he could come out right now, he might be one of the very first picks of the NFL draft.
Yes.
That wasn't uncommon at all. He had six interceptions. He had played on a national championship team. He was one of the best players in the country on the college level. He played seven games the following year. Certainly, that was a COVID year. The college football world, the world was turned upside down. So certainly, you can't hold that against him. Last year was a year where he had to deal with criticism. He only played three games. Let's be honest about the state of LSU's program last season. It was a bit of a dumpster fire.
Dumpster fire feels kind, actually, Gene, because you're talking about an arm injury to the starting quarterback. You're talking about injuries across the team, the COVID stuff, the rumors surrounding Ed Orgeron, the head coach, and the sexual misconduct scandal that was to come, ultimately costing him his job, losing games straight up that they should have won. I mean, all of this was going south as Lil Sting was making this calculation for himself.
Yes, and all of that said, I think if he could have come back and played, he would have. I think he was that determined to try to make it work. He was willing to play hurt. I think it took for others to step in and say, hold on a second, let's get this fixed. You're not coming back until you're 100%. And as we've discovered, he still isn't 100%. But the reality of the situation is he has a long NFL career in front of him. I think he probably, him and his family probably made the right decision. So when your son is in a situation where he can make generational money, do you risk further injury? My guess is that Big Sting, knowing the history of that in his own family, I think he made it very clear to his son, look, son, I know you want to play. I know you want to be true to the coaches and the player, your teammates at LSU, but we have to look at the big picture here. This isn't an ankle sprain. It's not a dislocated pinky. It's a tendon tear. And it's something that if it's not addressed and addressed correctly, could impact, seriously and significantly impact your football future. So from grandfather to son, to a Lil Sting, I think it's a fair thing to say that had to fit into the equation.
Trauma is generational. Generational trauma is this concept that is real and to be reckoned with. So what does this say to you at the end here as you look forward to Lil Sting getting drafted into the NFL, the next possible star for whatever defense is lucky enough to get him. What does this story tell you about him and his family and what you learned?
The quote that will forever stick with me is Derek Stingley Sr. saying, "We're aware of our past. We don't run away from it. We run toward it." And to me, that is a family credo. They're proud of what grandfather did. And yes, his career was ended prematurely, and his life ended prematurely because of a tragedy, of unspeakable tragedy. But they embrace who they are, and they're proud of the Stingley name.
It was like, "We're passing the torch. It's all you now, son. Go be great."
Gene Wojciechowski, thank you so much for bringing this part of this family's story to light.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.